Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. Also, once again, we are going to be talking about one of your requests. We have been asking people to leave a rating and a comment on iTunes and their request an OGN, an old trade that maybe we reviewed before, maybe we missed at some point over the history of the show. Whatever it is, this week we are going to be talking about the Daredevil Ultimate Collection Volume 1 at the end of the show that was requested here. And if you would like to request something, again, just drop it in the comments in the rating section over at iTunes. But let's get into the new books first. Kicking it off with Batman Superman, World's Finest, number one from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Dan Mora. This was teased a little while ago, but as you can imagine from the title, it is the two biggies mixing it up with a bunch of villains from their various rogues galleries.
That's what I call them.
Yeah, exactly.
Zack Snyder's The Biggies.
Yeah.
I mean,
Notorious B.I.G.'s.
You know what you're getting into here with this title. You also know what you're getting into with Mark Waid, who's just a classic commensurate comic book writer. And you got Dan Mora, who is the artist off of one of our favorite books, Once in Future, here.
Yeah.
So I was already pre-sold on this book, but how do you think it actually panned out?
Also, speaking of pre-sold, there's also a real fun variant cover with Seinfeld that I was when you're paging.
I'll tell you what, that... What's the opposite of pre-sold? Unsold me when I got to that?
Oh, really? I was like, I remember that Superman commercial he did. That was fun. That's a fun little shout-out.
What a nice gift for that very rich man.
Oh, Jesus.
And you know, the people are always talking
Somebody woke up and just started drinking Haterade.
That's usually you.
It wasn't Seinfeld. He drinks the blood of young children to keep himself fresh.
All right.
They say that comics aren't connected to the young people, but putting Jerry Seinfeld on the cover is finally bringing in the young kids.
The young kids love it.
Justin, what did you think of this book?
I mean, the Dan Mora art is great.
Oh, I got kicked to this curb on my... All right, that's cool. That's fair.
You went way far.
I wasted my time.
No,
I guess
you yielded your time.
I tried.
Call this a little bit of shrinkage of your section.
Nice. Wow. That's good. You yada yada right past Pete, unfortunately.
Yeah.
This book is good, and Mark Waid, you know, he's not doing as much comic book work these days on the writing side, so he is putting it all out there. He's juggling so many different things. There's some flashbacks that are connecting two different time periods, a ton of villains that are great to see mixed up. And like Pete said, the Dan Mora art is really, or he's about to say, the Dan Mora art's a real kick in the pants, probably.
What?
There are no grandmas, though, so I feel like let's get the Pete rebuttal.
Not to interrupt, but potentially they're coming because Superman gets injected with red kryptonite in this issue that makes him cycle through various powers, so it's possible he might turn into a grandma at some point. Anyway, take it away.
That's right.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
All this delaying of Pete's commentary is making me thirsty.
Oh, wow. Anyways, I just think that this is clearly super fun. The art's unbelievable. It's nice to see these characters drawn in this kind of style and way. It really feels like an epic, just kind of event, and it delivers. You get what you pay for. You know what you're like. You're hoping like, oh, this is going to be cool and really fun, and it is.
This comic truly is sponge-worthy.
Carnage number one from Marvel, wow. Written by Ram V, David Michelinie, and Ty Templeton. Art by Francesco Manna, Ron Lim, and Ty Templeton. This is following a new take on Carnage. The guy's gone through a bunch of different interpretations over the year. But here, the Carnage symbiote is now on its own, kind of has the personality of Cletus Cassidy, but no body. There is a new serial killer who wants to use the Carnage symbiote to be the new host. And meanwhile, there is a detective who is tracking them down that I'm going to go out on a limb and say is going to end up with a Carnage symbiote somehow. But regardless,
wow.
I'm just going to throw that. You calling my shot there. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, not a big Carnage fan, like this issue. How did you guys feel?
Yeah, I think the art's really creepy in a great way.
I agree.
I love the tone, the kind of the speed of this issue. It's a great Carnage issue. I think it is a cut above a little bit. And I really love the action and the paneling here. It's gross in all the right ways and intense. And even the creepy butterfly scene's a lot of fun. So, I think this is a solid ish.
This was way scarier than I thought it was going to be. It was, like, horrifying in a bunch of different ways, just from the body horror. And then it was really well done. From a Carnage story, I feel like you never really know exactly what you're going to get. And this one was scary in the right ways for me.
I also want to give a shout out to the backup stories. The one by David Michelinie and Ron Lim is a little more classic Carnage that I thought was fun. But the Ty Templeton cartoons at the end are great, and maybe my favorite part of the issue. He's doing like old school comic strips with Venom and Carnage, and delightful.
Really no commits to you. Snoopy. Yeah. What?
I said, no soup for you. I finally got a Seinfeld reference in.
Oh, yeah. Right on time. Well, speaking of falling asleep briefly during the podcast, why don't we talk about Slumber number one from Image Comics, written by Tyler Burton Smith, art by Vanessa Cardinale. This is a book about a bunch of dream hunters that take care of problems in people's dreams. Of course, there's something bigger and deeper and more horrifying going on. But I thought this was a lot of fun. I didn't know anything about this book going in, but I really enjoyed it. And this is a world that I am excited to explore more as we go on. Pete, you raised your hand. You have a question.
No,
dreams
I just want
are the movies you watch when you're asleep. Does that
no? Yeah, you know, I'm familiar. I just wanted to jump in. I love this. This was really bananas good. I thought this, like, the art really kind of met this like dream world tone in such a great way. I was really impressed with this book. As far as the number one goes, like, this, like, really gets you excited for more and such an exciting write. I was just really blown away by this book. The writing is so intense in such a cool way, and the art. I love this. Even though I'm scared, I'm still having a great time.
This, I agree. I like this a lot too. What a bad job, though. It's a hard job to have to go into someone's dreams and kill their nightmares, where it's just like, hey,
that's rough work.
Stop eating pizza before bed, and that'll kill your nightmare. That's what I would say. But these people have to go in and fight the monsters.
Dude,
eat a banana.
Have you tried stop eating pizza before you go to sleep? It's really hard to do.
No, I know. Believe me, what I do when I go to bed is I just lay a piece of pizza in my mouth and close my eyes.
Smart.
And I'm like, see you tomorrow.
Smart. When you wake up,
I want to
crust.
Not to break up this discussion, but I do want to give a particular shout out to the scene where she goes in to kill the Goblin King in the comic, which is clearly David Bowie in Labyrinth, and she ends up having sex with him.
Yes.
Very fun character.
Fun.
Just a good time. Definitely recommend checking this one out.
But Alex, how do you handle the pizza situation, though? Like, how do you?
I thought you were gonna be like, not to break up here, but I just want to say shout out to pepperoni, which is my favorite pizza topping.
My favorite pizza topping is pepperoni and black olives. I never get to have it because nobody in my family likes
gross.
Black olives.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what, Alex, I love a black olive.
No,
we can share a pie
pizza.
Any day.
No way, man.
Where do you like them? On the tips of your fingers that you slowly eat one by one?
Oh my fingers, God. You mean. Eat my fingers one by one.
Yeah.
God. Oh, I'm dreaming right now. Wonder Woman number 785 from DC Comics, written by Becky Cloonan, Michael W. Conrad, and Jordi Belair. Art by Rosie Kemp and Paulina Ganachau. The backup story continues, I think this time done in one story of a young Wonder Woman. But the front story is picking up on the Trial of Amazon storyline.
That's right.
I will say I was a little iffy about the kickoff of Trial Amazons, but I think this was a lot stronger. What about you guys?
Yeah, as common as I like to do, I like to break them up. You know, like the first half wasn't as great, but the second part really just like took it home. So, yeah, I'm very excited for how this is moving forward. We're getting kind of a little forward movement. We get another kind of like... Shadow guy who I still think is Dr. Psycho messing with Wonder Woman. And the backup issue was really cool. Kind of reminded me of a She-Ra style of art. Loved it.
Mm. Yeah, I'm still a little... It does still feel like that this isn't... The universe, the Wonder Woman universe, isn't quite ready for this crossover yet, I feel like. I don't know enough about all of the other characters to be like, oh, I see this is a really even-handed story. It feels like we know where it's going. They're going to fight. But I wish they were, the old Iron Fist story from, that Matt Fraction did, where all the different... And that felt like it had a little bit like they were in a different place. There was no one driving it. They were just in this tournament. And it feels like that's what we're heading for. But it's hard to tell. It feels like the characters aren't behaving at the in a way where I'm like, oh, I see this decision makes sense to me.
I think you're a little confused because it's a trial. They're not going to fight. It's a trial. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's so, like Law and Order where they're like...
Exactly.
Sam Rodderson rips off his shirt. He's like, I'm coming for you, man. I'm coming for you. Prepare for the son of water.
Wow, yeah. Just
what episodes of Law and Order are you watching? Yeah.
The ones in the WWE. The Silver Coin, number 10, from Image Comics by Michael Walsh. This is another continuity issue fleshing out the world of this evil silver coin. Here we find out more about the ghost that inhabits it and the demonic spirit behind its power. Some things go very terribly for a bunch of young kids in a house altogether. Now, Pete, I know you've been a little 50-50 about the series. Do you like the continuity issues more than the done-in-one ones?
No, these are just as scary as the other ones, so no thanks. I mean, it's impressive how well this is kind of weaving and, you know, the storytelling and the ones and dones. Like, it's really impressive. And artistically, it's kicking ass, but man, this is just so scary and creepy that it makes it tough.
Do you feel like this comic is making you scared of regular coins?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When someone's like, sure, here's your change, sir, you're like, never mind.
No, I always just look to see if there's a little eye bulging out, and then if it's not, you know, but they're always kind of like, sir, why are you looking at your coins like that? And I'm like, checking for the eye.
What about GW's eye? You think he's looking at you?
Well, you just got to, if you've read the issues, if the bulge is happening, you're in trouble.
One time, Abraham Lincoln winked at me on a coin.
Yeah, really? Your lucky penny?
Wow.
Yeah, man. I thought this was great.
Flexing
by the way.
One time, Abe Lincoln winked at me. All right. Big time. Yeah.
That is quite a flex.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought this was really good, though. I really enjoy the mythology issues. What about you, Justin?
Well, I was going to say, I do think the mythology issues are cool. I prefer the one in the done in once.
Wow.
So I definitely appreciate fleshing out the universe of the coin and getting to more of the backstory. But I just love the anthology series where this series is doing really scary stuff across the board. So keep it coming.
Eternals the Heretic, number 1 from Marvel, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Ryan Bottenham and Edgar Salazar. This is an issue focusing on Thanos is now in charge of the Eternals. He meets who is initially presented as his grand uncle, a guy who was rejected and imprisoned by the Eternals hundreds of thousands of years ago. As usual, I thought this was a great issue of this. The art's great. I know these are sort of killing time a little bit to let the main series catch up, most likely, but it really just... This is a good Thanos story, and I don't know the last time that I read a really good, solid Thanos story like this.
Well, and it's crazy that the Eternals story is so rooted in Thanos. Like, he's the main villain of the main story, and now we're getting him sort of as this, you know, following his rise. He's learning from his granduncle how to be a worse dude.
Yeah.
Which is, that's what uncles are for, really. Mm-hmm. That's what the uncle I hope to be. But it is a great story. It's great art, and
don't
I am interested.
Uncle.
No, don't talk about from my life, my eternal prison.
I thought you were like, going to go, we don't talk about Bruno there. I was like, man, you.
No, I don't.
Oh, somebody's watched Encanto.
In my house, we don't talk about Bruno.
Okay, all right.
It's a little overplayed.
Yeah, I hear it.
Second best song in the musical, I'd say. Pete, did you offer up anything about this book? Or?
Yes, I would love to. I really liked, this continues to be such a strong book. The art's unbelievable. This is very cool storytelling. And just like the way it starts, like only family can kind of like talk to you that way. And the only way Thanos would probably put up with it. So it's nice to see somebody kind of being like half. You're putting in half the work. Only family could. I thought that was really hilarious. You know, like... but really cool story, fun kind of reveal at the end. Yeah, this continues to be absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, shit on it by saying it might be like a stalling issue or whatever. I think this is just absolutely fantastic comics right now. You just, you know, you can't even say something's nice. You got to kind of pull some on the end. There.
I'm just saying it's bad and I hate it. That's all.
What kind of uncle are you, Pete?
I'm a positive influence on you know, my niece and nephew's lives. You know what I mean?
How many nieces and nephews do you have?
I have two nephews, one niece.
Oh, okay. The middle one though is sort of like a stalling kid though, right?
No, how dare you.
Which of the kids is sort of the Thanos?
So far the youngest is the Thanos.
Oh boy.
Wow. Yeah.
The Clay People, Colossus number 1 from Image Comics, written by Matt Hawkins, art by Christian DeBarry. This is a modern retelling of the classic Golem story, mixing in some heavy metal songs.
Yo, who are we rooting for in this book? This book, I was like, yo, that was intense.
Yes. This is, I guess, an adaptation of a song by a band. As mentioned, it mixes in a little bit of Jewish mythology very lightly, deals with the idea of a biracial kid growing up in small town America. So it's tackling a lot for a one shot. How successful do you think it was?
I mean, I liked a lot of the ideas here, and I actually liked the song lyrics and the song being this undertone to the whole story. But when all the killing started, I was like, whoa, I don't know. I was sort of on board with the Golem kid, and I was like, you killed everybody? Felt
spoiler,
a little
dude. Spoiler, yeah, well, bro. Come on.
I mean, it's not a specific spoiler. It doesn't kill. The Golem doesn't kill everybody, but truly, it was. I was a little bit taken aback.
Well, you know, as someone who's not Jewish, I just wanted to say, like, the story was really... like kind of, you know, fresh, or not something that I was kind of like, oh, here we go or whatever. And I felt like the hardcore music kind of like giving you this warning of like shit's about to go bad. You know, there's nothing like a good head squishing. I mean, you know, it's such a you know, like relaxer and kind of a nice kind of like a relief of stress. So yeah, I thought this was really badass and intense in all the right ways. Some really cool art and interesting kind of take on something we've maybe seen before, but not quite like this.
Speaking as the Jewish member of the podcast, I'll just clarify, we all have golems. So
but you know, believe me, that's why I like.
Is that what those Funko Pops are behind you? Mm-hmm. They're all
we call them Funko Pops, but they're
you have a bunch of tiny golems that just bobble their heads a little bit.
Yeah.
That's nice.
That was White Walker from Game of Thrones. There's a lot going on in this book. Like you said, Justin, I think some of the stuff is successful. Some doesn't work as much, but it's an interesting as a one shot, and I always appreciate a good short story. Moving on to Robins number 5 from DC Comics, written by Tim Seeley, art by Baldemar Rivas. In this issue, our Robins have been trapped in a VR wonderland by the evil Forgotten Robin, and they have to work their way out. And as usual, this title, I think, is just like super clever, super smart, digging into the history of the Robins, loving every issue more and more.
Man, I wish we could talk to this Tim Seeley guy. He seems like a great writer. And this is just...
Pete, I just want to mention, I don't know if you know this, but a couple of weeks back on a live show, we talked to Tim Seeley about this book.
Wow.
No.
That's crazy. I'm so glad that that happened.
After we do the live show, I just completely erase it.
I just delete it.
It's live art. It's live jazz. You know?
Wow. That's deep. Don't start. I just think that this is a lot of fun. Really great art that kind of matches the tone of this. Ton of action. Love the kind of anime style they're having fun with. And really cool last page. I thought this was great.
I love seeing the lives of the Robins if they hadn't become Robins. That was such a cool thing to insert in the book without slowing down from the other storyline. Tim Seeley, just from talking to him like we did, he's a writer that puts it all out there all the time. Like, he could have waited and made this like its own arc or something. And instead, he just is like, this is going to fit right in here and it's going to roll. So I love it.
I love it.
Why don't we move on and talk about Rain number 3 from Image Comics, written by David M. Boer, art by Zoe Thorogood. And in another bit of kismet, we had David and Chris Ryle, who's the editor of the book, on the live show just a couple of weeks ago, so check that out. In this issue, our characters are continuing to travel through a world where rain, hard as nails, has been falling. They encounter some roadblocks, literally, in this issue. How are you guys feeling about this 3 issues in?
I love this series. The thing that popped out the most to me in this issue is just the dialogue is so, it feels like just like a great play script or something. Like, it's just so good. The characters are so interesting. The art really fits the world. And the monster of this book, this rain that keeps coming, deadly rain, is so it's a great just metaphor, and it makes me think, what would I do? Where would I hide with the nail rain? Where would you guys go? Would you go, what do you think, cave, or would you just have like a jacked umbrella?
Oh, I just let the rain fall. That's it for me.
Wow, you just walk outside.
You just go out there.
I'd be like, rip me. I'd tweet that first. I'd be like, rip me, and then I'd step outside and I'd get nailed, baby.
Wow, just kiss your family goodbye and just walk outside, huh?
Yeah, they can fend for themselves.
Wow,
one less mouth to feed. As we find out of this issue, things are getting pretty bad because they're like, wait, if there's no rain, aren't all the plants and animals going to die? So, you know, they don't have very long anyway, I guess.
Dark take.
Yeah, this is a very cool book. This is very interesting. It's kind of a fresh idea. And I love the Umbrella Kid. He's adorable in all the right ways. I'm super into this. This is cool. The art, the kind of like the tones in the background to kind of set a mood. I appreciate what's happening here. This is artistic and really cool.
Justin, did you?
Also, I would to answer your.
I went first. You went first.
Okay. All right.
But to answer Justin's question, I would go with a heavy umbrella because I got to be mobile, agile. Right,
fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Why don't we talk about Reckoning War, Trial of the Watcher, number 1 from Marvel, written by Dan Slott, art by Javier Rodriguez. This is a one-shot that completely took me by surprise. I didn't know what to expect from the title. If you don't want spoilers, definitely turn away. But basically, the Watcher has gone to the rest of the Watchers to say the Reckoning is back. They're using our weapons. We need to stand up. Stop watching. Get involved. And the Watcher's dad is like, you know what? Actually, we're going to strap you into a Clockwork Orange machine and make you watch the one what-if scenario you have never watched before. And that what if scenario is what if the Watcher had never gotten involved, going back to the classic Galactic storyline for Fantastic Four. It is such a smart, precise thing that only Dan Slott could do, just like pulling that out of continuity and be like, oh, right, of course you've never done that. I thought this was fantastic. I love
it. I thought it was a kind of a classic dad move. You know what I mean? Like, you know what your punishment is? You're going to sit down. I'm going to strap you to this chair and make you watch this goddamn scenario.
And we definitely have to loop back to what's going on in your family life. But Justin, what did you think?
I mean, I agree with you. This felt like a what
classic dad move. Yes. Thank you.
This felt like a what if that Dan Slott has been thinking about for a long time, and to include it here I thought was really cool. I will say the way it worked out is, what if the Watcher hadn't interceded, and it comes down to everything worked out pretty well except the Fantastic Four had weirder faces.
I think that was the whole idea. No, I kind of love that. I love the idea that if he hadn't interceded, if he had just watched, if he had done his job, things actually would have gone pretty well, you know? So having this flip, like we talked about this a lot with the What If cartoon series, but having this flip here where usually you have the what if as a worst case scenario, and that's what he's always observed. Here, seeing the one good what if happen, and it's all his fault, is, I think, like a perfect like little twist of the knife there. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, personally. That's what I'm saying. It's a little bit of a dad flex on the kid, and I don't appreciate
what
it.
You're talking about.
But also, it's a weird lesson.
You don't appreciate
it. Yeah, it's a weird lesson. It's like, you know, sometimes the best thing to do is just sit around and watch a lot of TV. It's like, what are you saying, Dad? I don't understand.
Well, but think about it. This dad is like, hey, kid, you had one job. Your name is The Watcher. All you got to do is watch. And what are you doing?
No, but sometimes.
You're interceding?
Sometimes you got to get involved.
I didn't name you the interceder. It's like, Pete, if your name was the podcaster, which is what I call you, and you were just not podcasting, like, of course, I'd be like, what the fuck? You're the podcaster.
You're not going to podcast? Yeah, exactly.
Let's move on then, talk about Stillwater, The Escape, number one, from Image Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, Jason Liu, Andrew Wheeler, and Ethan Young, art by Ramon K. Perez. Jason Liu, Sue Lee, and Ethan Young. This is an anthology series set in the world of Stillwater, where a bunch of the town's residents are sitting around talking about folks that escaped from this town where nobody ever ages. Obviously, there's a big twist at the end there that's revealed. But this is the first time we've seen people who are not the main team writing the world of Stillwater. How do you think it panned out?
I like this. I feel like it's a story that it feels like, oh, this is just like a fun in-world thing, but it actually sort of folds back nicely by the end to be another sort of like scary bit of history here, and setting up a little bit more of the direct. It feels like the main line of this story is now shifting over to getting away. It was like, let's see if we can upset the people in charge, and now it's shifting a little bit.
I mean, I feel like it does fit in perfectly. It feels like, you know, Stillwater. And, I was just a little disappointed in the creepy turn it took at the end. And I was just like, well, fuck that.
Wow.
All that being said, the art and kind of stuff was great, and it really felt like Stillwater for sure.
Ramon Perez, very good. Wait, you don't like a twist, Pete?
Well, I don't like that twist. You know, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but again, the dad character coming in and ruining all the fun. Yeah, I mean, what the fuck, man?
Again, we
no
really
one
have
would
to get back
and analyze this.
Wonder Woman Evolution number 5 from DC Comics, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Mike Hawthorne. Conversely to the last Wonder Woman issue we talked about, this is not part of Trial of the Amazons, though the main Amazon is definitely on trial here, being messed with by a bunch of scientists. And being put through the paces in an alternate universe scenario. What do you think about this title so far and how it contrasts with what's going on in the main Wonder Woman title?
Well, I don't know about all that, but I would like to say that this story was really awesome. I loved how action-packed it was, how it moved. I loved the art. I just really felt like this was awesome, like a great little side to everything that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, this This feels way more focused. Like, I was, my criticism of the other Wonder Woman title was it feels a little bit like
criticize other people's. Come on, man.
This is what we're doing. We're doing this podcast.
You could be a little nicer about it. You know,
still not being mean, but love all of these people working on these books. This is more focused, and I like that it's sort of it's taking Wonder Woman and putting the character out in this whole other world. Funny that the character reveal we have here is similar to the one in the other Wonder Woman book. Happening at the same time, but it's fun.
What's the furthest place from here? Number 5 from Image Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg.
Bergie.
Yep. Art by Tyler Boss.
Bossy.
Not as much fun when you wait for it, but all right.
You like to be an interrupter. You don't want to have space for it.
That's right.
But in this issue, our kids are all at a weird, messed up carnival. They end up messing up themselves in a big way in this issue. But I continue to love just how this is laid out, how this story is being told, the way they are unfolding information about this weird world with only kids. How are you guys feeling? Just in general.
I'm pretty good. I'm on the West Coast, so it's a little early right now for Should Be Podcasting. I really like this book.
You shouldn't be drinking then.
Well, but I'm thirsty. the way this book, the format of this book, works so well. It's like these sort of short chapters that move the story forward, but it leads to this tone where it feels like like life is cheap a little bit in this world. And the way it moves so quickly through, like, jokes and this horrible death in this book, in this issue, like, really adds to the world building that they're doing here. I guess what I'm saying is, like, it's rare to find a comic where the format itself really informs the story it's telling, and this comic is doing that in a cool way.
I agree with some of that. I think that artistically, it's really impressive, like, the moments that it has just because of the paneling. Like, when we have, like, these two people kind of walking, and then all of a sudden someone calls out of the window in the background, it's kind of hilarious instead of a, oh, shit moment because of the, I guess what you're talking about, like, maybe the cheapness of it or whatever. But I think that it's interesting to kind of have it dictate all these things. Like, crazy thing happens, end of a chapter. And you're like, wait, what? And, you know, they're really kind of telling the story. It's interesting the kind of, like, the way it's messing with us. I just think, like, artistically, tonally, this is a really interesting book, and it continues to kind of push in this unique way. It's worth picking up alone just for the kind of difference it puts out there than other books. It's very impressive and cool.
Nightwing number 90 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Geraldo Borges. In this issue, following up on our crossover with Superman, Son of Kal-El, now we have Nightwing teaming up with the Flash after there is an attack on his life at his building. What'd you guys think about this one?
I thought
they're buddies.
It was a cool team up.
They're good friends.
What's
it's
going
nice.
On here?
Yeah,
you guys don't like the friendship. Flash. Is that the issue? Is that the issue?
You don't like the Flash?
Yeah. Every time we talk about the Flash, though, you're like, he runs fast. Who cares?
Yeah. Well, that's me.
Well, it's just we get it.
Pete, you really got to stop criticizing stuff so hard.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right, man. Thanks for pointing that out to
me. Do you want him to run slower?
I really like this issue. I love bringing back the friendship between Wally and Dick. I thought that was a lot of fun. Every issue of this is really, really good. I missed Bruno Redondo's art a little bit just because it's so next level. But Geraldo Borges' art was still very good. Next up, Homesick Pilots, number 13 from Image Comics, written by Dan Waters, art by Casper Wingard. In this issue, we're finally getting to the root of the mythology here of what's been going on with these ghostly haunted houses, but it may be too late to save our heroes, I don't know exactly who the heroes of this book are, but I guess too late to save our haunted house, one might say.
Let me just say, like, this is a crazy sentence, but I'm really caught enjoying the high drama built around humans wrapped in ghosts fighting in a nuclear exploded base, and then on a larger sense across the city where a house is getting beaten up by another big old robot ghost.
Yeah, it's impressive when there's this giant kind of like Godzilla fight happening in the background of all this kind of story. It's really impressive what this comic is doing. Yeah, it's really creative. It's really intense. It's spooky, but there's all these kind of other things wrapped up in it, just like the kind of thing is wrapped up. So it's really impressive. I'm having a great time with this book.
Next up,
when a house gets up and fights, it really changes just the real estate game in general.
Oh, man, does it.
Detective Comics, number 1057 from DC Comics, written by Mariko Tamaki and Matthew Rosenberg.
Bergy!
Art by Aman K. Nahupan and Fernando Blanco. In the front story,
Blanky.
We are really getting to it. The whole Bat Team is coming together to take back Arkham Tower. There's some big twists and turns here as we're starting to wrap up this storyline. And speaking of wrapping up storylines, we are one chapter away from finding out the ultimate fate of this little kid who's now a grown adult, it seems, who has been now gotten to the point where he's manipulating things in Gotham in a big way. What'd you think about this one?
This is just bananas good. I mean, it's just really exciting. So much fun. Like, we were kind of building to all this action and the way the team is kind of finally working together. It's very intense and absolutely fantastic. I mean, this is a tight package. It continues to be the backup and the front story. You're getting your money's worth in this comic. This is bananas good.
You love bananas. Let me just throw that out there.
I mean, what's not to love?
Okay. I really like the way this story, I think we've talked about it a lot, it's really surprised us with how great it is. And I think the way it's coming together is such a cool device for a Bat story where all the other non-Batman characters are sort of the focus in different ways. And then Batman comes on the scene and sort of like pulls all the threads together, which is what Batman's whole thing is when he's the center of all the action, to withhold him and then have him be the linchpin, the hub that brings everything together, I thought was really cool. And then the backup is also keeps sort of shifting focus a little bit. We sort of aren't following our kid in this story, but just the ramifications of the position that he's risen to. So I'm excited to see all of this come to a close.
Next up, King Spawn, number 8 from Image Comics, written by Sean Lewis, art by Javier Fernandez. In this issue, we're getting a all-out brawl between Spawn and a bunch of villains as, again, very coincidentally, Sean Lewis was on our show a couple of weeks ago talking about what was going to be happening here in the Spawn universe. So this is all coming to play here. Lots of emotional stuff as well. Pete, you're our Spawn guy. How'd you feel about this one?
Well, this continues to be a lot of fun and really kind of badass. And as, Mr. Lewis talked about on our show, it was this...
Mr. Lewis.
Like, you know, he's going to pull characters in from the past and kind of use them. And he was very excited about how the kind of the weaving of that was going to unfold. And we're kind of getting a little bit of that here. This is just... living up to its title here. This is just crazy and badass in all the Spawny ways.
Spawny. There's, you could definitely say that this issue is quite Spawny.
Yeah.
I like the dual focus here with King Spawn being mad about having to be king and trying to reject the crown. Well, at the same time, we're watching this Kingslayer being trained up and sort of influenced to be like, you got to kill this Spawn guy. He's a bad king. And Spawn doesn't even want to be king. So the setup there, I think, is really fun.
Last but not least, let's get to our request from iTunes. This is requested. I'm going to try this by Sidje Wicked Jebe.
Nice.
Let's see. On iTunes, this is Daredevil Ultimate Collection Volume 1 from Marvel, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by David Mack, Joe Quesada, and Alex Maleev. So this is taking the first storyline that Brian Michael Bendis did on Daredevil with David Mack over the course of 4 issues. Then they took a break. I believe there was a story by Joe Quesada. And then it kicked off the epic lauded run by Alex Maleev and Brian Michael Bendis that really redefined Daredevil for a new generation. Pete would like me to give me a lot of hand symbols here.
Wrap it up. But the, you know, the thing was, we were supposed to focus on the Maleev Bendis Daredevil, not the stuff that we weren't supposed to read, the prior stuff. We were supposed to check out.
You're right. You are correct. The request was from Maleev Bendis Daredevil. But
thank you. So what are you doing with all this other shit?
Here's the thing. The David Mack stuff rules.
That's so good.
Oh, my God.
I love the David Mack.
Yes.
I don't know.
But that's not what the person requested that we do, right? He didn't say, hey, go back and then check out some of your favorites. He said, fucking Maleev Bendis, check it out.
Yeah, but I think you really want Mack Bendis.
No, no.
Do you want some?
Dude, if I'm somebody who listens to this podcast for a shout out and then you get my shit wrong, I'm going to be like, oh, thanks, asshole.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Pete, you would be very upset if you got the shit wrong. That never happens.
I'm just saying, you're fucking up. Come on, this person asked us. For the specific thing, let's do that.
Do you want some fudge on your half fudge sundae, or do you want more fudge?
Here's what I'd like to do. I'm just going to throw this out here, okay? So I agree with you. You're correct. They requested Maleev Bendis. I do think talking about the whole thing is fine. I'd love to talk about the Mack stuff and then talk about the other stuff, because here's my experience with it. I realized I don't think I ever read this. Like, I knew about it. Because specifically what I wanted to mention about the Mack thing is I've heard people joke. Hold on. This is what I realized that I had never really read this one.
How can you tell me I was right and then go back and be more of an asshole by saying, like, sure, we'll talk about the belief. But you know, this Mack thing.
Let me just say one thing before you guys continue this fight. For those of you listening, while I was talking, Pete was doing a full Kramer, like, goink, like 50 different facial reactions.
Let me finish what I'm saying. I got to the first thing, and I initially didn't realize it was David Mack because the Ultimate Collection has the credits on the front page, and I was like, okay, this is Alex Maleev. This doesn't look any like Alex Maleev. I don't know what's going on here until I realized later on it was David Mack. But when I was reading the story, the first story is... it's basically told through the perspective of Ben Urich, who is investigating this thing going on with Frogman. And I remember hearing back in the day, I was like, wait a second, I vaguely remember.
What are you doing?
Let me finish.
We're supposed to talk about the Maleev!
Pete, do you want me to get to that? Or do you want to keep interrupting the train of thought where I'm explaining what's going on here? I had heard back in the day and throughout the years about, like, oh, man, Bendis totally ruined Frogman. And that's when it suddenly occurred to me, oh, I've never read this. And then when I got to the Alex Maleev stuff, I was like, okay, we're getting to the thing about, like, outing of the identity and everything. Okay, I definitely read this. And then I realized, no, I actually never read this either. I read way later in the run, probably when we started reading it for the show. But my whole point here is whether it's the Mack stuff at the beginning or I think it was, like, 20 issues of the Maleev Bendis stuff here as well. This was a real pleasure to revisit, particularly because we've been honestly pretty harsh on Brian Michael Bendis over the past couple of years on his DC stuff. So revisiting this heyday really reminded me what a fantastic writer he is, what an incredible job and what a defining work he did with Alex Maleev, in particular on like the history of Daredevil every time since. And that Mack story at the beginning is like a nice bonus kickoff there that really reminded me very heavily when we were talking about the Joker series by James Tynion IV, which focuses more on Commissioner Gordon than it does on Joker. So just looking at this thing as a whole, as this volume, this Ultimate Collection, it's just kind of incredible how much of a tone he set for so many things with his run on Daredevil that I think, like, intellectually I knew somewhere in the back of my head, but having never read any of this, I was bowled away how much of that DNA you can see in so many books today.
Yes. I mean, I agree with you. I think what Bendis does here is really put Daredevil and Matt Murdock, who's a character that's always been like, woe is me, my life is hard, and connecting that with, like, the noir detective and sort of making him that and all the characters around that, like Ben Urich in the first story, like you're talking about, really have that sort of very noir, like hard crime saga tone to it, worked so well that I think it's changed Daredevil forever. And Daredevil is just always going to have that sort of like really like hard crime element to it. And then on top of it, both Mac and Maliv, but I guess we should focus more on Mac here, really the art really leading that creator, that tonal show, and like being sort of the first way in we get to this crime thing, especially, joking aside, especially Maliv, who went on to be like the crime guy, the like boots on the ground character, like being able to like really establish those heroes. This is a huge, huge run for the character and sort of all these characters that are sort of orbit around Daredevil.
First off, you shouldn't kind of just say Maliv is just a crime guy. He's so much more than that.
I'm not saying he's just a crime guy.
He set the tone out loud. So I'm just saying, you know, maybe watch.
You're just mad. You just had your haterade.
Pete, I'd really appreciate if you didn't criticize things, by which I mean Justin.
Okay, great. So anyways, I'd like to talk about the Bendis Maliv run. I think that this is just unbelievable art. I love Bananas. The action, the focus, not so many words, just really letting the artist. I mean, there are panels where it's just four panels for the whole page. Just like amazing stuff. I mean, there's stuff that were like, there's that one part where Daredevil's choking out the dude and you see Daredevil's face in the windshield of the car. Like, unbelievable art that just is. Just kind of like where Bendis was like, I'm not going to word this up. I'm going to fucking let this kind of flow. It really is impressive what Bendis does and Maliv in this story. I'm so glad we got to revisit this. It was just like, even the little moments where like Daredevil is looking and then there's just a shot of Bullseye and then he's like, wait, what? And it was just like, I mean, that was like just to kind of set the tone and stuff, like so well done. I just was really blown away by this, and the whole kind of like Kingpin kind of Murdoch back and forth was really enjoyable. The fact that Daredevil's upset that like he got his secret identity revealed before Spider-Man was a fun thing. Like, oh man, even the Electra bit, like just the little bit of Electra stuff we saw, Foggy's mom was hilarious. I just feel like this was really, really great. And the person who recommended this, yeah, this is a great representation of somebody who we kind of know for a certain style, showing us that they can do other things and be other things because of the project that they're on. So really awesome.
Foggy's mom is my new favorite Nelson.
And also the Bendis cameo as Stiltman was really funny too.
The what?
It was clear that that was Michael Bendis playing the part of Stiltman in that. That was pretty.
What,
looked
what
just
did you
like
read,
him.
Pete? Now I'm curious what you read.
I just kept reading. Like it was. I went.
Oh, okay. This is another classic. Pete talks about something that we weren't reading. Okay.
Well, I read Bendis and Maliv. I read all the Bendis and Maliv for like a lot of issues. It was really great.
It's just crazy how you put a flag in Alex's heart at the beginning of this.
Yeah, you're like, don't talk about four issues at the beginning of this volume we're talking about, but I read 300 issues of comics and I want to randomly talk about something that I need issue 297.
That's right.
The one other thing that I wanted to say about this, just apropos of what you're saying, Pete, is I think like this is going to get a little slammy, but like, first of all, the amount of focus here and the pacing is so deliberate and the jokes are sparse but come in the right places. And I think a lot of this stuff has become, maybe he's just writing too much at this point, you know, but like they become sort of like crutches that he relies on. And
don't
I would
give him a compliment and then take it back by slamming him. What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, you'd never do that.
I don't think he's just saying, I think this is like Bendis's seminal run, and now his work, it feels a little bit like, and I'm not speaking for you, Alex, but feels a little bit like an echo of this.
I think he's such a good writer, and he's so smart, and he's so direct with the characters that he has a possibility of getting back there. But I do wonder if he's writing so many things and has written so many things and has leaned into the style so much that I would love to see him get back to something like this, because crime is where he started, you know? Like, that's what he was writing about, and that's why he got raised up through Marvel, through DC, through these other things. I'd love to see him focus on just like the simplicity of this concept here, really digging into and driving into the characters. Because also, he gets news better than a lot of other things. Like, comics get news wrong. They get how newspapers work wrong. They don't sound right. They don't sound like newspapers. And he's tried to do some of that with the Daily Planet, and I don't think it's kind of sung in the same way as it does here.
Yeah, well, then so many comic characters are set at news organizations. It's like such a funny thing that now it hits way different than it did back when all these heroes were created.
Yeah. This is a great volume. Definitely pick it up.
Yeah, thanks for recommending this.
Thanks for recommending it. Pete doesn't recommend checking out the first four issues by David Mack, who he thinks is
But someone asks you to do something else, you shouldn't fucking go and do other things.
The David Mack stuff is better. Thank you so much for tuning into the stack. Thank you for your recommendations. If you'd like to support this podcast,
different art styles, both great in different ways. Club.
Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
It's amazing how we truly are able to podcast and heckle at the same time.
Baby.